Live from Edinburgh, Radio Napier, news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Energy, Napier University's student radio. The time is 10 to 5 and I'm your host, Owen Scott. In today's programme, we'll be looking at one of the most effective ways of reducing income inequality. We'll discuss the effects of the new alcohol minimum pricing laws on your pocket, and we'll let you know what to look out for tonight as the supermoon takes centre stage. But first, today's top story. Following Donald Trump's election, Scotland's First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, has written an open letter to the President-elect congratulating him. The letter emphasised the long-standing ties between Scotland and America. She says she hopes this relationship can be strengthened. Ms Sturgeon also stresses the importance of shared values of equality, tolerance, diversity and human rights for all, regardless of race, faith, gender and sexual orientation. She added that she hopes to see such values flourish during Mr Trump's presidency. I spoke to Mike Wade, a journalist at the Times newspaper, who worked for Trump for a number of years, to ask what he thought a Donald Trump presidency would mean for Scotland.
I don't really think he's thinking too hard about Scotland at the moment, but he has a 13-year relationship with Scotland since he started looking at that development in Aberdeenshire. He really does take his business interests very seriously, and he does have a very high opinion of these golf courses he has in Scotland, and he's also a really bloody-minded man, and he really wants that thing in Aberdeen to work, and he wants to pursue it because he likes the battle that he's had with the Scottish Government. And I don't think he'll forget Turnberry in Aberdeen, and I think he will come back.
Mr Trump was stripped of his title as Business Ambassador for Scotland following his comments that all Muslims should be banned from the United States. I asked Mike how the relationship could be repaired.
I think in two ways, possibly. Firstly, that he seems to be rolling back slightly on some of his promises, doesn't he, and some of his intemperate remarks. So I think that will continue to happen. And I think because something called real politic does come into play, that they have to deal with him, the Scottish Government have to deal with him. He's the single most powerful person in the West. Additionally, I think Trump made a huge mistake with those remarks about Muslims because his business is all over the world, and I think his comments about Muslims will have damaged his business. So I think he knows already that he made a mistake with that, to be honest.
Some people have criticised Nicola Sturgeon for publicly sharing her opinion on Mr Trump, so we asked Mike Wade for his own thoughts.
I think a lot of people have butted him up. I think she said the right thing. I think it was a fairly astute political move. I think if she had done the kind of vault fast that people like Boris Johnson have done, that would have made her very few friends in Scotland. It would have alienated her support in Scotland.
Childcare has been identified as a key to reducing income inequality. Research conducted by Heriot Watt University in Edinburgh found improving childcare to be potentially most successful in closing the gender pay gap. Professor Glenn Bramley conducted the research.
Our research we developed this model, and then we tested out a lot of different policy ideas that the Joseph Rowntree anti-poverty strategy were thinking about. And they suggested some, and we suggested some, and we had some interesting discussions. In the end, we tested about 40 different policies, I think, something like 40, are reflected in the report that we produced. What's been distilled from that is, at the end, you know, after the thing was prepared and published, was which ones seem to be, you know, maybe you get most bangs for your buck sort of thing. And it happened that the childcare policy was the one that came out on top of that list.
A mother of two, Sinead Scott, commented on why improvement in childcare is important in tackling income inequality.
I think that's probably where the biggest gap kind of remains. Certainly in my work, you know, there has been a lot of work done to make sure that, you know, grades and terms and conditions are all the same. So the main difference that's left is the fact that, you know, I've had time out to have the family. I'm the one that's working part-time to care for them.
4 years after the Scottish Parliament voted for a minimum price on alcohol, the new higher prices are due to come into effect. The changes state that alcohol should be priced at 50p per unit and found that nearly 70% of beer should be increased in price. Since 2012, the Scottish Whisky Association had been fighting the decision in court but lost their case just last month. Earlier, I spoke with our special correspondent, Matt Farnham. So with the festive season right around the corner, how do you think this will affect the average shopper?
Well, they're saying that the biggest effect will be blended Scotch whisky producers, with some brands having to increase their prices by 20%. Vodka could also see increases of up to 16%. Now, Famous Grouse, that can be bought today for £15, and under the new rules and new legislation, that would actually rise to £20.
With last month's court case ruling, it isn't against EU law to impose minimum pricing. When can we expect the prices to change?
But there's no definitive answer on that yet. The Scottish Whisky Association is still currently reviewing its options, whether to take the case to the UK Supreme Court. The feeling within the industry, as I said before, is that the raising price will cause jobs to be lost. Of course, the counter-argument from Alcohol Focus Scotland points to the figures showing less people heading to casualty, a reduction in crime, and most importantly, saving over 60 lives a year just in Scotland, as well as pointing out that if you do go out to pubs, restaurants and bars, you're already paying way above the minimum price anyway.
Do you think the streets around you are dirty? A study released today says they are. Keep Scotland Beautiful, a nationwide charity which aims for a clean, green and sustainable Scotland, reported that only 92% of Edinburgh's streets are suitably clean and free of rubbish. This result falls 3% below the target of the Edinburgh City Council and is 6% lower than in 2015. Leith Walk ranked the lowest of the 500 streets which were examined, only scoring a 67% cleanliness rating. Suzanne Roberts, Director of Communications for Keep Scotland Beautiful, pointed to the actions of individuals.
And we've seen a decline in the last 18 months in environmental quality, so an increase in litter, fly tipping and dog fouling. And these are things that have happened right across the country, not just in the cities. And what we're really looking to encourage is individual behaviour change, because all of these problems are caused by individuals who act irresponsibly and could take a step to make sure that their actions are good for the environment, so by putting litter in a bin or to picking up after their dog.
Mrs. Roberts did say, however, that the organisation remained very optimistic for future projects. In other news, the Joe Cox trial has started today. The Labour MP was murdered on her way home from a meeting during the Brexit campaign on June 16th. According to a new UN report, 2016 will likely end up being the hottest year ever on record. The new global record follows two previous record warm years. The UN said the continuing global warming will cause more extreme weather in the future. Stefano Brizzi has been found guilty of murdering London policeman Gordon Semple. 50-year-old Brizzi admitted cutting up Semple before trying to dissolve the body in an acid-filled bath. And in Edinburgh, 25 incidents of vandalised cars have been reported since yesterday night. The police are appealing to witnesses to come forward with information. Edinburgh has Scott's Monument, Edinburgh Castle and a Royal Mile. But for those of us who live here, there is another institution which will soon disappear. The independent music store Ripping Records announced last week that it will be closing at the end of this month, after more than 40 years of business. The Edinburgh Institution has been owned and run since the start by John Richardson, who is now ready to retire. Our arts correspondent Kenza Merlin spoke to John this afternoon.
Ripping Records was once the most popular ticket destination in Edinburgh. I asked John Richardson about some of his best memories of the shop, and he recalled the queues for Oasis back in 1996.
They sold out two shows at Loch Lomond, and we had a queue that went from the front door along the South Bridge, round Hunter Square, down Blair Street, along the Cowgate and up Nidri Street. Nobody would get that today because people don't queue anymore.
The iconic music shop is widely regarded as an important part of Edinburgh's independent music scene. The city has seen a rapid decrease in the number of record shops over the decades, with music and ticket sales moving almost exclusively online. I also asked John whether he thought the closure of Ripping Records would have an effect on music in Edinburgh.
Oh, I don't know. It's not really for me to say, I don't think. I wouldn't have thought so.
I spoke to some other record shop owners about whether the closure will have an impact on independent music in the city.
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, I know people who did go there to buy tickets because they don't like buying from, you know, the big companies and stuff. So I suppose so, yeah. Nobody's going to take on a record shop in 2016. They'd be absolutely crazy.
Ripping Records to me was like a ticket agency, really. It wasn't really a record shop, so that's a bit of a misnomer, really. It was a CD ticket area. Avalanche is shut, which is a record chain. HMV is shut down. So that's sad, because I think more the merrier. That's always been my philosophy.
November the 26th will see Ripping Records closing its doors for the last time. A massive part of Edinburgh's music history, it will be truly missed.
And now, how does some tea and cake with a dash of murder sound? In honour of Edinburgh's literary legend, Robert Louis Stevenson, and his 166th birthday, the Edinburgh City of Literature offered Stevenson fans a rare chance to experience a cup of tea with a side of murderous discussion at Stevenson's childhood home. In the lead-up to this year's Robert Louis Stevenson Day, the city hosted a range of events centred on this year's theme of Stevenson and crime. We sent our reporter Vanessa Taft to Harriet Row to find out more.
17 Harriet Row, a modern family home with an historic literary connection. I'm here to see custodian John McPhee, who's invited me into the house's original dining room, a room which has remained largely untouched since Stevenson's time. I asked John how it feels to live in Stevenson's house.
It's always been a joy, really. I've lived here since I was 10, so I've grown up with the friendly shade of Stevenson my whole life. If you're lucky enough to be the custodian of a house like this, you do need to share it a little bit with others who share that interest. And so Stevenson Week, Stevenson Day, is a great chance to explore and to show and to celebrate all the various different things that he did.
As guests arrive, an endless flow of tea and delicious homemade cakes appear. I spoke with Lauren Nicodemus to see what drew her to Murder Among the Teacups.
This one seemed particularly interesting because it's at his childhood home, and there's tea, and we talk about murder, so all of those things excite me.
With full bellies, we moved upstairs to the drawing room for a wee taste of murder, where guests were introduced to journalist and biographer Jeremy Hodges.
To lead you among the teacups and the various corpses strewn around the history of Stevenson's Edinburgh.
Jeremy delved into Stevenson's childhood and described a typical day for Stevenson and Harriet Row.
He would have breakfast here, you know, sort of breakfast egg and tea or coffee or whatever, and say, you know, bye mum and dad, I'm going off to the uni.
Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, one of Stevenson's best known works of fiction, has been adapted for the big screen many times. It depicts the Victorian era as one of crime and prostitution. I asked Jeremy how Victorian audiences sitting in a drawing room just like the one at Harriet Row would have reacted to Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
To shock the Victorians, because they'd never figured this one out before. When we read Jekyll and Hyde, the impact is kind of spoilt because we know that Jekyll and Hyde are two sides of one person. But to the Victorians, when they were reading it as a detective story, the penny wouldn't have dropped until the end that Mr. Hyde and Dr. Jekyll were the same person.
I would never consciously harm Sarah. You must believe that.
I don't know what to believe anymore. Look at you, Jekyll. You look like a laudanum addict.
And now over to Robin Gilley for the sports roundup.
Gordon Strachan is considering his future as Scotland's head coach following Scotland's defeat last week. Strachan will meet with the Scottish FA on Friday, who say they have the final decision on the coach's post. This comes after Scotland's 3-0 World Cup qualifying defeat to England. I spoke to Devote fan and attendee at the match, Graham Patterson, who had this to say.
I think his record speaks for itself. You know, obviously, he's lost quite a few games now. He's lost some games that he should have won. I'm not convinced he even has the dressing room these days. And he's had a fair innings, and it's time to try someone else.
Elise Christie, the Scottish speed skater, has broken the 500-metre world record at the second World Cup event in Salt Lake City. The 26-year-old Livingston native beat China's Fan Keksen's 42.504 second record, clocking a time of 42.335 seconds. Scottish tennis player Andy Murray plays Marin Cilic at the World Tour Tennis Finals later today. It is his first match since becoming world number one. Murray spoke out about his strategy for the tournament.
In my group, there's maybe a bit more experience, you know, from the guys. I'll try my best to get through it and take it one match at a time. I got Marin on Monday and I lost him the last time in Cincinnati, so hopefully I can play a bit better.
Finally, be sure to keep an eye on the sky tonight as the supermoon rises over Scotland's capital this evening. Chloe Henderson reports.
Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's a supermoon and it's lighting up a sky near you. Tonight, observers across the country will catch a glimpse of the moon at its biggest and brightest in 69 years. Making its closest approach to Earth since 1948, the moon will appear 7% bigger and 15% brighter than normal. We spoke to William Taylor from the Edinburgh Royal Observatory about the science behind the phenomenon.
When it goes round the Earth, it's not in a perfect circle. It's a little bit of a squashed circle, which means at different times in its orbit, it's sometimes a little bit closer and sometimes a little bit further away. And a supermoon is sort of when you get the full moon when it happens to be at the point when it's closest to the Earth. So you do get supermoons quite often, it's just this is a particularly close one.
He said that whilst the supermoon isn't that exciting from an astronomical perspective, it's always good to see the public excited about space.
From an astronomical point of view, we're not that excited really, because it's not that much closer than it is at other times. We're only talking about a little bit bigger. If this encourages people to look up and look at the moon, that's great news as far as we're concerned. But do it any time, you know, not just when it's a supermoon.
Whatever you do, don't miss it. The moon won't be this close again until 2034.
Thanks for listening. I've been your host, Owen Scott. Be sure to watch out for the moon tonight and follow us online at radionapier.com.
This is Radio Napier.